Well, it was definitely an edgier seat game today if you were a fan of hockey. Another great comeback. Ranks right up there with many other great comebacks in different leagues at different playoff times. Obviously, for a gold medal game to be down 2-0 with 3.5 minutes to go and come back tied up and then win it in overtime was outstanding. A gentleman who's been in a few of nail-biting games like that en route to winning four Stanley Cups with the New York Islanders before he won a few more with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Hall of Famer Brian Trottier joins us. Brian, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Jason, pleasure to be on. Thank you. Yeah, it was a nail biter to say the least. There, congratulations to the women. God, it was an exciting game. Nail biter, like you said, right to the end.
As a guy who played in so many of those, when you sit back and now you're just a fan, you're many years removed from the game. Do you enjoy that even more because maybe it brings you back to memories of you being in games like that?
You know, the older I get, the more I seem to enjoy it and the less I seem to participate in it, you know, versus my youth where I wish I was out there. But you know the fun that they're having. Like, people think it's pressure, and there is some pressure, but it's a good kind of pressure because you're playing a game you love to play. You're doing what you love to do. You've practiced thousands of times. It was just such joy to see great hockey, especially at the Olympic level. I mean, I've enjoyed it in the past, but it seems like I'm enjoying it more this year. I've got my Maple Leaf gloves on here with that I picked up at the Hudson Bay Company. They're pretty cool, and I'm just thinking that I'm the lucky charm every time I put these gloves on, so go Canada.
When you we were talking about earlier the Olympics and the NHL teams. Gar Snow, of course, is fired up because NHL players are there, and he lost his superstar John Tavares for the season, of course, with your alumni, the Islanders, and saying, you know what, we don't necessarily want to be there because we lose out. You played in Canada Cups, Brian, and I look at the Olympics, and I think it's great because the Olympic stage would be bigger than any World Cup stage of hockey because it would just be hockey. Now it's hockey in the Olympics. What do you think? Do you think the NHL players should stick in the Olympics or they should go back to the kind of the Canada Cup / World Cup?
You know, that's going to be a great topic for discussion, conversation, debate, you name it. You know, especially when you see the injury to like an MVP player like John Tavares. These are the kinds of things I think everybody kind of holds their breath and hope doesn't happen. And the I think the uniqueness and the positives of the game come out versus the ugliness of an injury to a star player. And unfortunately, you know, you're playing your heart out and these things are going to happen. So we certainly wish John a speedy recovery. I'm thinking, you know, I wish I would have been able to play in the Olympics. I mean, it's just a different stage. It brings out a different patriotism in all the players. You know, the Canada Cup was for a pension. It's just sure there's great patriotism for playing for your country. It just has a different effect on when you have billions of people watching. I'm really proud of the guys that are performing out there. God, they're playing so well. The U.S., Canada, Finland, Sweden. I mean, they've really been outstanding. I just really hope everybody just continues to play the high level of hockey and everybody stays out of the injury bug.
Brian Trottier joins us. Brian, a lot of people are focusing on the fact that a lot of the forwards aren't scoring. The defensemen are picking up the slack, and it's a team game, so it doesn't necessarily matter who scores, but it doesn't look good right now with that many guys struggling. As a dominant offensive player in your time, is it just a matter of time, do you think, or does the offensive group, do they need to get better chances closer to the net? Is there anything you think they need to do different offensively?
You know, I'm a big believer. You know, we can criticize all we want, and we can compliment all we want. I think what happens when you're on the ice, and I'm not in their shoes, obviously, but it depends what the other team gives you. And it seems like the fact that they're giving up the point shots, and the guys are blasting it. Weber's, you know, fired. Dowdy's really getting good wood on it. I mean, that's what the other team is giving them, so they're taking advantage of it. And the boys are screening. They're creating a lot of havoc in front of the net, Backus and the group. And I'm just saying to myself, they're getting rewarded for it. So whoever gets the rewards, I think, is awesome. So I think as a group, I don't think they care who scores the goals. It's how they score the goals and what the other team gives them. And in the long run, when it comes back and they say, okay, well, so-and-so didn't score and so-and-so didn't score, you know, they're supposed to be high-fluted hockey players. You know, they're generating stuff for the points, and they're generating traffic in front of the net. So I'm believing that's what's happening. I'm not there on the ice, but as a spectator watching it, that's kind of what I'm seeing. So I can't be too critical. I just hope to keep winning.
Brian Chartrey joins us. Brian, when you played, the opportunity for the Olympics wasn't there. Obviously, it came right near the end of your career when you were in Pittsburgh. But in the 80s, you know, NHL guys going to the Olympics wasn't there. And that made the Canada Cup so special, especially with the Russia-Canada rivalry at that point. Talk about that one team that was essentially all Oilers and all Islanders, and just how unique that was to have so many guys from two teams that really battled each other and probably hated each other, yet respected one another at the same time.
Oh, congratulations to Canada. I mean, it was a great series, and they came together when they had to most. I think it was a Mike Bossy tip, a Paul Coffey shot. I mean, it just kind of epitomized, I think, the connection, I think, that the Islanders and the Oilers had to have in order for them to be successful. And later on, when you had the Lemieux-Gretzky connection, it just seemed like there was just always, the elite players are able to, like, find a way to get the chemistry going at the right time. And the bigger the game, or bigger the stage, or the greater the player, they come to life. And sometimes it's meant to be, sometimes the bad balance, it goes against you. But it was nice to see that you get rewarded for those kinds of efforts from those great players.
You talked about chemistry, and you and Bossy had some of the best ever. When you look at pure goal scorers, no one's ever scoring 50 goals in nine straight seasons again like Mike Bossy. It's just never going to happen. Brian, what made him such a good goal scorer?
Well, I think the fact that he was just a hungry hockey player. I think when I look back and I'm talking to kids and I'm comparing players to today's player, from the players that I played against compared to the players that I watched on TV, Mike wanted to score goals, and he was fun to play with because of that. I mean, you throw him the puck, and he wanted to score goals. And that kind of hunger kind of feeds off everybody, and it made me want to be hungry. It made me want to, like, learn from him and be a student from him, how he scored his goals, the different ways he scored his goals, how he came to the rink, and he was just so focused on scoring goals. And he was underrated as a playmaker and underrated as a stick handler, and underrated as far as his speed and ability to not be found on the ice. He's like stealth out there, and I was just so intrigued by all of this, and I love learning from him, and he was fun to play with for me, and I think a little bit of a terror for other teams. But I mean, that's what separates the great goal scorers from the other ones, is I think that hunger, that intensity to want to be the guy that scores goals. And you try to tell that, and it sounds like it's a selfish thing, but I think there's a good selfish to being a goal scorer. You know, are you going to, you know, lack Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky for scoring so many goals, and Marcel Dion, hey, they like scoring goals and they're good at it. So compliment on them and learn from them. And hey, there's a selfishness about it. And I think that's necessary in order to be great.
Brian Trottier joins us. It's a great analogy because you're right. Sometimes you have to be the guy who's willing to want to shoot the puck, and doesn't mean you're going to score all the time. And as teammates, you can't – how did you – you are obviously a very good playmaker and a pretty good goal scorer yourself, Brian, but I guess you just naturally understood that, hey, you know what, Mike's going to be the shooter, and there was never any sort of, well, geez, he's overshooting. Players don't ever think a teammate's selfish, do they?
Very seldom. You know, I mean, Mike was kind of a law of average guy. He really liked to get 7 or 8 shots a game, and he put himself in a position to get those 7 or 8 shots, so we liked getting him the puck. He made himself available, so of course we're going to feed him. So those kinds of things kind of add to the attraction of Mike being the shooter, and I think the pressure that he put on himself, and I think the fact that the other team was kind of keen on him, he still found ways to get those shots on net. I think that was good for us as a group, and we all recognize the value of having Mike be like that. But thank you. Like, as far as, like, no one ever says, there goes Brian Trottier, the great goal scorer. It's kind of comical. I just kind of like, I like being the kind of the guy that was his wingman, even though he was the winger. He was the goal scorer. I was the guy that kind of created things, and he was as creative. He was as gifted playmaker as I was. It's just kind of like what happens in life. You know, okay, if Mike wants to be, I think it's awesome, because he was way, way better goal scorer than I was. And was I way, way better playmaker? I don't think so. It's just a great compliment of two, you know, guys that were skilled to be able to go out there. You know, I got a lot of ugly garbage goals, but there's no ugly garbage goals in the game of hockey. They're just good hard work and hustle goals from somebody taking a shot, somebody going to the net, getting a rebound. And Clark Gillies would say to us after the game, he goes, how come I got two guys covering me and I'm driving the net? I said, Clark, you're creating space for us. So great job. And it works. You know, you need those three guys to be able to, like, I'll take hold of the rope and do what's necessary in order for the three guys to be successful as a line. And we had that going for a long time, and we rode that wave as a group. And because of that, I think we're all thankful that we've had the success. Our names in the Hall of Fame, go figure. And we look at each other and kind of giggle because it was just a fun time in our lives, fun time in our careers. And I think all of our teammates are appreciative. We certainly appreciative of our teammates. And I love that group of guys, and certainly feel like it was a unique group of guys, just like those Oilers of the 80s. And I mean, you look, and I didn't like those guys when they beat us out in 84, but I'll tell you, when you meet them and you hang with these guys, you realize what great champions, what really good people they are. That's what makes championship guys is not only the fact that they're great hockey players, that they're good people, and they find ways to win, and they find ways to, like, work with each other.
Brian Trotsche joins us, a six-time Stanley Cup champion, a Hall of Famer. He will be in town in April for the Alzheimer's Face-Off Tournament. We'll get to that in a second. When you played with Bossy, who had a great one-timer, Brian, did he like you to put the puck in a certain position for him to one-time it? Did he like it, you know, in the middle of his feet? Did he like it near the front, near the back? I'm assuming you guys talked about that. Where was his kind of hot zone that he liked to get the puck?
Well, everybody has a wheelhouse, and Mike was no different. You know, if you put it in that wheelhouse, you got a lot more on it. But Mike had the uncanny and unique ability to get off one timer off, even when he was off balance. Both feet were in the air, like the goal in Vancouver, where the puck's jamming him a little bit. He still gets enough on it to get the puck on the net and force the goalie to make a great save. Otherwise, it's in the net. And we like that. Sometimes he'd say, Brian, don't throw it in right at me. Just throw it to a general area. Don't put too much speed on it, and you know, I'll jump into it. And we would practice that. If he didn't score for a game or two, I'd go out there and just slide him pucks for a good 45 minutes before practice when the ice was really good. And he was hungry. He wanted to be great. He didn't want to be good. He wanted to be great, and he wanted to be a great goal scorer. I mean, he put that kind of pressure on himself. And the year he went for 50 and 50, it was an opportunity to do that. He said, "This may never happen again, but let's go for it." And we all kind of became a part of that little race he had towards history, and
it made it
fun. You know, it made every game a little more fun. You know, maybe in the doldrums of a season, all of a sudden something's a little more exciting for everybody, and that's what made it fun to play with guys that might score goals. You know, I grew up with guys like Willie Desjardins and Bernie Sorin, and you know, we liked going out there and scoring goals, and Kim Laidlaw and Michael Kirk. I mean, it was just really fun to think back and, you know, play with a puck hog like Claude Jensen. And he's not a puck hog, but it just seemed like it at the time when we were little kids. These guys all wanted to be the guy that scored the overtime goal in the seventh game of the Stanley Cup, and we all dreamt about playing in the NHL, and lucky me made it. And, you know, these guys are still my buds today, and we all chuckle about those early days of ours. But, you know, we were all Mike Boston. We were all Jean Beliveau's. We were all somebody when we grew up, and it's nice to be able to have those dreams when you're a little guy, and then, you know, your friends or somebody you know makes it. And I'm cheering as much for the kids now that are playing in NHL of guys that I know, and it's really kind of nice to be able to, like, be a spectator and put my pom-poms on and, you know, wave my Canadian heritage and, you know, cheer for really good hockey.
Brian Trotsche, Hall of Famer, joins us. Brian, I know you'll be in town again for the Alzheimer's Face-Off Tournament, April 11th, 12th, and 13th. A guy you played against, you mentioned at the time you didn't like playing against him, but obviously respect him now, is coming in. Paul Coffey, maybe the greatest skater of all time, definitely of his generation, without a doubt. Tell me.
I'm great friends with Paul Coffey. We were teammates here in Pittsburgh. We won a championship together, and we had great conversations about the once mighty Oilers and the once mighty Islanders, and we chuckled about it. We giggled and laughed. And, you know, it's just intensity, and it's competitiveness, and it's water under the bridge. And alumni now, we have a great time talking about the olden days and talking about families, and I get to talk about grandkids. It really makes it fun. But no, Paul was an absolute he's so graceful on his feet, so fast. You know, he didn't make a lot of noise when he skated. Like, some of us would cut in and make that ice-cutting sound of our skates. He was right on top of the ice. You know, he made it effortless out there. And I'll tell you, gifted athlete, gifted hockey player, and just a great teammate. Like, I enjoyed my time. I see why he was successful in Edmonton. And he's a special guy.
When you guys had to try to game plan against Coffey, he was different because he would kind of come out of nowhere with his speed and be that late guy on the rush. How did Al Arbour, what was the game plan to try to counter Coffey?
Well, there was two things. Bring him to a stop in his own zone. We wanted to bring him to a stop as much as we could. We angle him off and bring him right to a stop, so he had to start all over again. He didn't like doing that, even though we'd bring him to a stop, and then it was just jam the middle down in through neutral zone and our zone and make him go to the outside. He loved taking that outside ice, but Billy Smith wanted those outside shots, and if he was going to dump it to the net, we'd just we'd have four or five guys just jamming the front of the net so that we'd outman them on loose pucks, because Paul was going to dump pucks, he was going to shoot pucks, he was going to get pucks at the front of the net, and he always seemed to find a way with that weird hockey curve he had on his stick, and it was a short stick, and but he was sneaky, and we just had to be head on a swivel kind of time whenever he was on the ice. But no, he was a big part of our defense, because he created so much on the offensive side, because like you said, he probably carried the puck, he'd come late, he's a menace on the point on the power play. He brought a lot to the table, so we had to be aware of him all times.
Before we let you go, Brian, McSorley's been the number one overall pick the last few years. So you got a six-time Stanley Cup winner and a Hall of Famer. To ensure that maybe you can move up the draft scale this year, what do you say to the teams that are listening out there why they should take Trotsche number one overall?
I don't know. Marty and I were talking about that. We're saying, Sammy, if Dave Semenko comes into the tournament, we might lose our spot. We could shift down one, because it's popularity as much as it is anything. And Sammy's so good in these kind of situations. He's got great stories. He's in the locker room. He's great on the ice. He's just a big presence. We just love him. So, yeah, for me to go behind Marty McSorley in Edmonton, I'll do that anytime. I'm just happy to be on the roster and come up there and enjoy a weekend with some great hockey fans and raise some money for, a great event like Alzheimer's, and support Gordie Howe if he hopefully shows up. It's a win-win-win for all of us that participate.
Well, I know the luncheon this year, I'm very much looking forward to it. I have the honor of emceeing it again. Alex Delvecchio is going to be there, and many other great, Walter Gretzky, of course, will be there, yourself, McSorley on the panel. So I look forward to that again, and I always appreciate your sharing some stories with us. Appreciate your time.
Stay in touch, Jay. It's always fun. Thanks.